Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and here are today's topics. Chelsea back to their best with a 2-0 victory over Tottenham. Manchester City's 12-match win streak comes to an end at Southampton. Liverpool closed the gap between them and City at the top after their triumph at Palace. Man United into fourth place thanks to Rashford's stoppage time winner against West Ham. Arsenal failed to capitalise against Burnley at the Emirates. And we assess the bottom of the table after crucial wins for Norwich and Newcastle. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode. All right, Robbie Earle, my friend. Bit of a crazy weekend. A lot of weird stuff going on in and around the games, and drones and helicopters and nets lights going out. Yeah, so there's lots of stuff going on. Of course, we'll focus on the football. On the top of those topics list was, of course, the big game of the weekend, mate, this derby, London derby.
Before we get to the games, mate, can I just quickly say, because obviously I missed last Thursday. I know you had Stevie Bauer, a good friend of ours, loved the podcast. Talking about things with him. Just that I was away in Kansas City, a very cold Kansas City, at the US Soccer Coaches Convention. I just want to say I was down there in the network of the American soccer scene that you'll know about. You were involved with coaching at one of the colleges in Boston. But just to say hi and thanks to all the listeners and watchers we have in the football community, mate. There's so many of them, so many people doing good work, all wanting to say hi to the other Robbie. We love the podcast, we love what you do, we love how you grow in the game, we love the interest from the game. And it was really interesting, Rob. So one of the big things that I'll say I would take away is a lot of coaches said to me, could you start to think about how you can connect our kids more to the action? So it was really interesting, and there was a few expats, people who've lived, maybe some people in from South America, that part of the world, but were saying in those territories, kids will sit and watch games all the time and watch and learn. There's a bit of a feel that the American kid doesn't quite do that in the same way, and they were all asking and saying, listen, is there any way we can help you or you can help us connect our young players to watching the games? That would be a great thing for us. So again, just wanted to chuck it out there. Want to say thanks to people, but it's something we might want to think about moving forward. Maybe some content that's a little bit more kid-friendly. And I know one of the networks has been working with, is it Nickelodeon in the NFL? And they've been putting on things like that. And it's a way of maybe attract kids. I'm not saying we go that far, but it's an interesting conversation of how we might make something a little bit more child friendly, so kids who are playing the game, and these absolutely millions of them all over the country, might tune into the best league in the world.
It's funny, Rob, because I'm not surprised that that comment was made. I mean, we've both been here a long time now, many years in America, and we all see the amount of kids that play. It's incredible, but the same kids don't watch that much actually. When I coached at youth levels. I coach at college level as well. I mean, the college kids are a little different, but sometimes the kids, the younger level, don't watch it. And that's what you're talking about. Find a way to get the kids to tune in a little bit more and watch more games, Premier League games, where they'll learn stuff. I mean, that's what coaches said to me. Like, there's so much to learn and enjoy about it.
There were a couple of suggestions, maybe a youth tournament that somehow involves the teams, maybe something more digital. Or, you know, is there some action that you could freeze and say, you know, what does Salah do here? Option A, B or C? What's the best option? Why? You know, just some way of connecting those kids. So I thought it was fascinating and loved the conversations. And again, listen, we might be able to sit down with some of our bosses sometime and just talk something through.
We did at the LA Fan Fest, Rob. We had a kick around, didn't we, with some young kids from a local club.
Yeah, and a few of those were there, actually.
Maybe a little bit more of that Fan Fest where kids can get involved more. Maybe come onto the set. I'm sure they'd love to do that. So, listen, that's lovely to hear. You know, people are listening and watching. They enjoy what we do. Yeah. It's so great that you could go there, Rob, and meet a few people and say hi. Good shout. Nice to hear that, mate. Nice to hear. I hope you had a good time.
Yeah, excellent. Right, back to the big stuff.
Yeah. Chelsea 2, Tottenham 0. Just quickly on the teams, Rob. I mean, Spurs a little bit beat up with midweek game, of course. Great win against Leicester late. A lot of, I think Lucas Moura had a knock. Not sure, Reguilón and who's the right fullback? Emerson Royal wasn't playing, Rob. We know he's injured. It was a bit of a, and he said it in his pre-match press conference, and Antonio Conte, that it was a bit of an emergency team
situation,
lineup.
Yeah.
Throwing a team out there. So always gave the impetus, I thought, to Chelsea to have advantage to win this game. And they went with a 4-3-3, something different for Antonio Conte. Mm. And I enjoyed how different they looked, actually. You know, I said it on the show. Like, I thought the football was a little quicker. I thought a little bit more urgent to get the ball up to Lukaku, get him involved, play him in behind a couple of times with some of those early balls in the game. Didn't get his goal, Lukaku, but more involved. Yeah. He looked like he enjoyed the game a little bit more and fully deserved their 2-0 victory, Rob, with an incredible, wonderful goal from Hakim Ziyech. One of those moments where, you know, kind of time stands still a little bit. I think it did for Hugo Lloris, the goalkeeper, who didn't get anywhere near to it. Brilliant goal. Thiago Silva with the second goal, Rob, and I continue to just be amazed at Thiago Silva, 37 years of age, immaculate defensively, immaculate on the ball, chips up. That's his third Premier League goal, Rob, by the way, from centre-back.
They're dangerous from corner kicks, aren't they?
Yeah. An important day for Thomas Tuchel, and there's a little bit of pressure on. And it's like, well, come on then. If you're all that, you've got to find a way to get Chelsea out of this little funk. And I thought today was a big day for Thomas Tuchel.
Yeah, it was interesting because I heard Tuchel after the game, Rob, and it was interesting that he did mention a little bit, and he's put it out there, you know, fatigue and tiredness has had its effect on the group, and he changed the system a little bit. And he said something that was really interesting, Rob, because he said, you know, it was a day when I recognise that we're not quite as confident in possession as we have been in other times of the season, which I thought was quite telling. So he's almost saying, we're not quite at it, you know, however they played in the system he played. So maybe a little change of system, sometimes freshen things up. I thought Ziyech, as you said, I thought was outstanding, burst off before the goal. The goal is a piece of brilliance. It's like the Ziyech we saw at Ajax that could dominate games. I saw him play against Chelsea a couple of times in the Champions League. And you know, he dips inside, he can see a pass, can score a goal. I thought Hudson-Odoi showed us that he can be a bit of a game changer on that left-hand side against Tanganga. Gave him all kinds of problems, helped in the goal. But it was interesting that Tuchel felt that a little change, freshen things up. And as you say, they played a little bit more penetrative football, a bit more forward than we've seen. It was a little bit more, I thought, running off the ball, trying to go beyond the ball a little bit.
Yeah.
And it made them more dangerous, and it gave them a different look. And the balance looked quite nice. And I just wanted to mention, and he was close to winning my underappreciated player of the week. And he's a little kind of pain in the butt. Full-back, centre-back, wing-back. He's captain of Chelsea Football Club and he's Azpilicueta. And I've got to tell you, mate, yes, they're missing Reece James, his dynamic play and Chilwell on the other side. And yes, there's so many others who are better passers, are better that. But this guy ain't got... Oh, no, he's still a bit of the heartbeat of this Chelsea team. And he gets his teammates when he needs to, and he gets at opponents, and he stands up for his team, and he has words with the referee. Mm-hmm. And he's another Rob who I think sometimes slightly goes under the radar how important he is to this Chelsea team as it's starting to groove into, you know, Tuchel's team. And maybe in the future, Azpilicueta is not going to be a big part of that, but he's still got a big role to play right now, I think.
It's an interesting shout, and I think there's a few moments in this game where he's feisty too, isn't he? He could be nasty.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
exactly.
He stands up for himself.
Bergwijn and whatever, wasn't he? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you think about him, Thiago Silva, Antonio Rudiger.
Yeah.
I mean, that's proper experience.
Yeah, old school experience, centre back.
I mean, it's going to help some of the younger players at Chelsea perform a little bit better. I thought Kovacic and Mason Mount were good in midfield, Rob.
Yeah, yeah.
Extra license to get forward because of Chelsea, it's normally two holding midfield guys, wing backs, three up front. I just thought they enjoyed something a little different and much needed. I think just swinging over to Spurs, Rob, and Antonio Conte afterwards was asked by Jeff Shreves, the Sky reporter, you know, because that is what everybody wants to know, is like, what's going to happen in the market and what do you need? And I think he didn't say a great deal, but you could totally know what Antonio Conte was talking about, Rob, where he's saying things like the gap is very big over recent seasons. The squad quality has gone down. It's not gone up. I've told the club my assessment of the team. They know what I want. I mean, he's basically laid it out, and that's what I thought Spurs needed. Like, it's the truth. For me, who's done it and won, this is what this club needs. Now, you know, we don't expect a ton of signings to come in. I think Adama Traoré, Robbie Earl will come in for a little over £20 million. So, like, $25, $30 million, which I think is worth a go because, yeah, do I think he's, I mean, he's not in the Wolves team right now, but he's got that crazy potential.
How can a guy who can't get in the Wolves first 11 improve Spurs? Because I just think, Rob, in the end, he'll end up on the bench where we always see him, and he'll be a 25-35 game-changing man, and that might be what he's been bought for. But to play in a team, I'm not sure he makes their first 11, mate, to be honest.
Do you think Antonio Conte is going to get fed up, Rob, with this job?
I think he already is. I don't think he's willy. I think he already is, Rob. I think you say just more what he doesn't say than what he does say. He holds his tongue. He talked about players, plural than singular, in this window, which is going to be so difficult. Yeah. He definitely, if he doesn't get players in the summer, Rob, I think Danny's put it out there a few times, I'm not sure he'll be staying around too long. This guy isn't a let's get top six in the Europa League football and think. This guy wants to be in there. This guy doesn't want to keep taking his Tottenham team to the likes of Chelsea and getting turned over. And can't go like for like, and their quality is better, and their organisation and their understanding of what they're doing is better. Their individual quality is better than what he's got. He can't live with that team. He doesn't need to be in that job. There'll be other big jobs out there, people who take him, Rob. It's going to be a real interesting test for Spurs, how ambitious they and Daniel Levy are to keep one of the best managers in the business.
It's interesting because Steve Bauer, Rob, on our last episode, thought that there would have been a conversation before he signs on the dotted line that there will be money spent. It worries you a little bit when you hear afterwards in the same interview, Conte saying, you know, you have to sell and then find the right players. I think that's something that he's got to deal with. Like, listen, we've got to sell some players. We can't just keep buy. Mm. And on that topic, before we move on, Rob, Dele, no one near the first team, left out today.
Yeah.
Do you think somebody buys him? Is he going to be loaned out? I mean, his future at Spurs looks done and dusted, doesn't it? I mean, that's somebody that you can get off the wage bill or maybe get some money in to try and, you know, we know that Daniel Levy and Rebecca made the point today on the show that, you know, Daniel Levy operates late. He operates late in the transfer windows, you know, because of the negotiating part
that's
of it.
That's when he gets his
We could
his
see
best,
Dele moving on
deals,
and maybe somebody else coming apart from Traore, I think.
The big problem for Dele, Rob, is we've kept saying, oh, maybe this manager, maybe this manager. We're running out of managers. The other thing that I learnt today, Rob, 6 years, I believe, to that Palace goal. I think it was 6 years, somebody said.
Oh, is it? That Palace goal, yeah.
To the Palace goal. That we keep going back to, that we keep talking about this kid that we've not seen. We haven't seen for the last 4 years, that kid. Mm. Is that kid still there? I don't know. Maybe time will tell. My gut tells me no, to be honest.
Yeah, me too.
But I think it's time for him to move and the club to sell him and get some money and move on.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think that should be absolutely on the cards. Why not? You move it on right now and free up some waste space. So, why don't you...
From Conte's point of view, I just wanted a couple of things on... First defeat for Antonio Conte, I think, reflects as well on him as anything else, because this is a team that's been going through difficult times, that's had its issues with Kane and system and Dele and then Ndombele and all the rest of it. Can they still grab that fourth spot, Rob? Or eventually is their lack of quality going to be counted? And I know that we've got the window, so we probably should wait till after the window before we can have a more definitive shout. But my sense is that the lack of quality is going to slightly put them behind some of the other teams.
Yeah, they've got a couple of games in hand over Manchester United right now. So they win those. They go above them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm with you. I don't know what I can remember what you said now at Boxing Day, Rob, and we reassessed who was going to be top four.
I had United fourth.
I had Man United. Yeah. I just think, you know, we'll get on to them. I just think they're going to find a way with some of the players they've got, and we'll talk about their game in a second. There's been steady improvement. There's been some truths that we knew we were going to get found out. He's definitely shaken the club up a little bit.
Yeah.
He's told Daniel Levy what he needs, and it's a matter of waiting to see what the club are going to do now. But I think he's kind of done what we expected him to do. The football's been better, But, you know, particularly today, you know, when you haven't got Lucas, you haven't got Heung-min Son.
Yeah.
Ray DeLong's a good left-sided player. There's a lot out today for them. And
quality.
That's three times. That's three times they've lost to Chelsea.
Yeah, without scoring,
in the last 19 days. So, then it's a big rivalry.
There's just a gap, isn't there? Just quickly before we finish, I just wanted to finish on Lukaku. As you say, I thought was a bit more involved, looked lively. I saw one or two of our friends from Sky were making comments. Jimmy Floyd Hasselbalt came out and something and said he feels he's a little bit static, not as mobile as he was, not making maybe one month the defender, one month himself. Talked about maybe his fitness. It was interesting that Jimmy said, right now, and I think they've got Plymouth in the FA Cup, I'd keep playing Lukaku to get his goals, to get his confidence, to kick him in. He said, he was almost saying, like, centre-forwards like me, we get confidence scoring goals in training as well as like anything else. He needs to get back there to start feeling good about himself. I thought it was quite an interesting point he was making.
Yeah, it's a good shout, isn't it? Keep playing.
Yeah,
I think it's a good shout. Get goals. I don't know, the fitness side of it, I mean, if he's not fit now, Rob,
he had the injury, didn't he? And he's come back, and I don't know what shape. But, yeah. I mean, Jimmy made the point again. I don't know what he said. If you looked at the Lukaku that came back from Inter and the Lukaku now, there's a slightly different body shape. He's not quite as lean as that guy we saw now. I don't know if that's living in England. I don't know if it's just lack of rhythm of games that he hasn't played. But he was saying that's where he's got to get back to, because he said that sharpness in his body becomes a sharpness in his mind. There was just some really quite interesting insights, and I thought, he's right, really. Lukaku, I mean, what Chelsea could have done today was a 3-0 win and Lukaku gets a goal. That would have been a perfect day.
Yeah. I'll never change my opinion on the Liverpool game, Rob, where he was disciplined. He'd on the back of scoring two goals in two games, looking good again, confident again, and all of a sudden the interview comes... public knowledge, and he gets left out of that game, a really important game. But anyway, yeah, I thought he looked okay today. I thought he made some good runs, more active, more involved, happier. A lot more crosses in the box in and around him, I thought was better. So, yeah, but you're right. And I think, it's a good shout by him. Play on and get some goals in the FA Cup.
Keep in there, get some goals. And 1 year for Tuchel, actually, as well, a little milestone. I think it's a year since Thomas Tuchel took over. Obviously, Champions League... in the World Cup challenge in the next couple of weeks. He's got a League Cup final to look forward to in February. Just, been a decent first 12 months, but as we know with Chelsea, you've got to keep winning and you've got to start getting near the top.
Today was important, Robin, that. I thought it was important. Four games winless in the Premier League, a little bit of pressure on.
Yeah.
You know, is he all that? Some of the criticism started to come his way, and he had a little regroup.
Yeah.
And, they got the job done today pretty well. I was impressed with Chelsea. Again, it looked a little different to what you might expect, particularly in the last few weeks.
Mr. Rostow, we have a race. Manchester City are not infallible. Yeah. They can drop points. 1-1 draw with Southampton at St. Mary's. Interesting game, this one. Plenty going on. City not at their imperious best. Southampton deserve a lot of credit. I think that's two draws now this season. Southampton drew at the Etihad, drew at St. Mary's. What are we taking away from Man City? Bit of hope for Liverpool or just a slight off day for Pep's guys?
Definitely a bit of hope for Liverpool. And you said it. I mean, they're human. They're not going to win every single game. There's going to be days where the players, for whatever reason, aren't quite at it. I don't think they were at it in the first 45 minutes of the game, Rob. And Raheem Sterling's chance, I think they're around the 38th minute, where, I mean, it's such a great chance. And I know you can't score all of them, but Raheem Sterling, he's in good form. He's got good numbers this season.
Yeah.
He's starting to get, goal scoring again. That was a great chance. It kind of summed up their first half, Rob, I thought. A little sloppy, a little casual. Southampton, did what they always do and 4-4-2 and well organized and compact and allowed the ball to go wide because crosses aren't going to really going to hurt them so much with the way the City play. Second half was better from them, but it's kind of random with City, Rob. I said this before, like they lost to Palace 3-0. That's Southampton twice now. They've drawn with them 0-0 earlier in the season and now, of course, 1-1. They can do that if they're not up for it. It's not as though you say, it's not with City where they've got to go to, they've got to go to Villa or they've got to go to Chelsea or the hard games where they could drop points. They could drop points any game.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's the nature of the league, isn't it? Yeah, that's the nature of the league.
I'd say more so with them. I'd say more so with them, where they can have an off day and they could lose because if their football's not great and they get caught a counter-attack or...
Yeah.
I don't know, I don't know. But it's almost like against the good sides, I fancy them to win. And against random weaker teams, you know...
Oh, they lost what? They've lost the Spurs, they lost 2-0 to Palace and then a few draws, haven't they, since then?
Yeah, yeah. But I think the Pep reaction afterwards, we kind of laughed a little bit about it in the studio, Robin. We have a giggle in there, you know, at times.
Yeah,
And Pep's reaction to the, you know, where he said, oh, we were great, like one of our best games of the season. And the commentator, the reporter said something like, really, Pep? Like, you think that was a...
Yeah.
And he kind of made a funny face and he leans in a little closer and said, absolutely, better by far or something. Yeah. He said, like, he does come out with these...
He does that one, isn't he? Yeah. Yeah, that's
but his
one when
it,
things
they
happen.
He,
of all people, would know that. But he does that a number of times, hasn't he? When I think I remember once when he came in early and he drew at Burnley. So that's one of our best performances we've ever had.
Yeah, I know, I know.
Really? I couldn't quite see that. How are we seeing Jack in the false nine? And apparently, again, I'm just reading a few reports, Rob, that he waited in the tunnel for Romeo, that Romeo done a good job in front of him, frustrated him. There was a bit of a conversation, and then they both went off to their own dressing rooms. But, again, it might take a season. We might be having these conversations, and next year we say, right, the slate's clean, he's got to come on. But these are the kind of games, Rob. You don't spend $100 million on a player to say, okay, well, yeah. You've got to make them better, haven't you? And you've got to make a team better.
Football's funny, isn't it? Mm. I mean, who would have thought Jack Grealish, if he goes to Southampton with Aston Villa, you know, we wouldn't be surprised if he runs the show.
Yeah.
Creates goals, dribbles, assists, maybe gets a goal. Yeah. Mm. You know, he always gets the fouls. He's a constant terror. And yet you put him into a better team that dominate and he's going to get a ton more ball that he doesn't perform. I mean, it's so interesting. Yeah. Also, by the way, him playing as a false nine again, Rob. He's played that before, and he hasn't been very good. Mm. Phil Foden played the left-hand side. Phil Foden's better as a forward. It's almost you know what? I know Foden's our best false nine, but I've got to get Jack going. I've got to get him going. I've got to get him scoring. I've got to get him feeling good at myself. I'm going to play him again and push Foden to the outside because I need Grealish to get going. His best team now, Pep, doesn't have Jack Grealish in it. It just doesn't. No. But to be fair, he's kept with him. He's going to keep getting him involved to try and get him to get the few goals to get his confidence up a little bit.
Is this way of playing that we see, and sometimes maybe we try and simplify or we assess it, we analyse it. But might there be more learning to this than from we see from the outside? You know, Bernardo Silva didn't have a great start when he went in. Raheem Sterling took a moment. Riyad Mahrez took a moment. Might there be more to this system than we're saying, you know, and it, you know, there's nothing worse, Rob. You know when you're playing, when the mind takes over and you're thinking about everything, not playing natural, whereas Jack would play at Villa and just get the ball and go and do his thing. Is there a transition from that Jack to what Pep's Jack's going to be?
I think there definitely is. I think Jack Grealish in an Aston Villa team can play in a manner and position himself where he really wants to be, where he feels in that particular game the most impact. He can't.
So
do
does
that
he
in
dictate in some way the style of play based on what he wants and where he wants to play?
Yeah,
because you often felt that, didn't you, at Villa? He could pop up in all these little spots where he wanted to go.
Well, an example would be, Rob, if he's playing as a left forward for Aston Villa and it's a tight game and he's not getting much ball, this is no good for me. I've got to be on the ball.
Yeah,
I'm going to drop back into centre midfield, Rob. Yeah. I'm going to get the ball there. I'm going to start spraying it. I'm going to start finding a way to dribble there. I'm going to use the situation for my benefit so I can have more of an impact. I'm not saying that's wrong at Aston Villa, but at City, no. He's doing that and he's doing that.
Yeah,
he's got to stay out there and make it happen. Yeah. And I just think finally on that, with him, the disappointing part is, and I'm a little bit surprised, that he hasn't shown the ability to dribble past the fullback like Sterling can, like Mahrez can.
Yeah, get to those red zones in that.
And that's what Pep wants his wide players to do. I think maybe he thought that he could dribble past that guy more than he has. Jack Grealish, for the most part, has received it, faced up the fullback. Nah, I'm not sure, you know. Pep, I don't want to give the ball away. He comes back and plays a backward or square pass, which isn't what is required. So it's tricky times, difficult times. But just keep playing him and playing an essential role to try and get more involved in the game. But it didn't really happen. And City dropped points. And, you know, we can talk about the gap and we can talk about the games in hand. Liverpool, one game in hand. They got to play him in April. Everything goes well. It could be a three-point gap. But that's a long way off, Rob. The April game is a long way off against Liverpool.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think there is hope. There is hope. They're not going to run away crazy with this league title when you've got a team as good as Liverpool around that keeps the chase up.
But let's go to City drop points. Yeah, let's go to Liverpool because away at Crystal Palace, never needed a place to go. Patrick's got his team playing decent football. Rarely have they not turned up this season, whether they've won, lost, or drawn a game. The game ended up 3-1. A lot of controversy about a second half penalty for Liverpool with the game at 2-1, Rob. We'll start with the beginning of the game, though. And Jurgen Klopp, I saw again the interview, and he said, whether he was slightly going to, but he said for 30, 35 minutes, we were in charge of the game, playing the football that I wanted, got the goals, and pretty much controlling the game. And then we lost a little bit of our way before half-time. Second half, we got ragged, we got pulled, our press wasn't as good, we weren't as united as a team, and allowed Palace back into things. And then we got the moment, the Jota on Guaita challenge that led to the penalty kick that pretty much set all the points, and had Patrick Vieira furious at the end, having to hold his tongue in terms of what he said. Should we start Liverpool first half first and then get into the incident after?
I want to get straight into the incident. In fact, there's two incidents, Rob, that were questionable. I think the offside with Firmino.
Firmino,
I don't know what angles you saw of that. I mean, it's not as blatant as the other one, but Firmino is in offside positions as the ball comes in.
And is he affecting Mitchell, that defender?
You know, he's wanting to challenge. He's definitely attracted to Firmino, who's offside. The ball is close enough for me for that to be interfering with play. Firmino's kind of in and around it. Tyrick Mitchell has gone over their heads, but he's still got drawn to him in offside position. I thought that.
I agree, but I can see why that one wasn't given, to be honest, Rob.
Far away from them, or?
Yeah, that he's not quite, you know, you don't know what effect. He's too far away from would he get there on the outside. I'm not so sure on that one.
Yeah.
I think one that we all want, everybody focused on, was the Jota going through with Guaita. And from, again, what I saw and what I watched of the game, mate, apparently it took 2 minutes 51 seconds to get to somewhere. So virtually 3 minutes. It took 17 looks of video from VAR to come up with a decision. Now, I think most people, and I'm including some Liverpool fans who were on social media, were saying it was never a penalty.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. You scratch your head, you get frustrated. We represent the league. We love the league. Yeah. We cover the league. Yeah. We cover every flipping incident in the league. Mm-hmm. And when VAR gets over-involved like this classic case, it's just annoying. One of my best friends is a Liverpool fan and actually was annoyed as well. This is crazy. What are they getting involved for? And I tell you what, Rob, lots of incidents this season, the referees right there, close to the incidents. I've got stuff right, by the way.
Yeah, they've calling it right. Yeah, their instinct is right. Yeah,
their instinct's been right. And VAR, like, someone get, you know what? That's, really, like, they find a way to get involved. Go and get involved. VAR should be sat there wherever they are, Stocky Park, and they should say, you know what? Have a look at this, guys. They should run a few videos and like, he's good to go. Yeah, he's good to go. Like, don't get involved. Yeah. Like, it's there for the howlers, the shockers, and the fact that that goes back and it takes them so long, I mean, that's the whole point. If it takes that long, Rob, to say...
It can't be clear and obvious error.
That's the point. I want the VAR to be like this. Casual, got a cup of tea, having a little snack.
Is it clear and obvious,
No, that's good to go. On you go.
How many times have we looked at this? Like 4, 5, 6? It can't be clear and obvious. I mean, right
and then
there,
the referee himself, Rob, goes over. When he goes over, it's almost like an automatic... Oh, yeah. Thanks, Mr. VAR guy. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And by the way, if you re-refereed it, which you shouldn't, it should be about clearing up this error. Yeah. It's still not a foul. It's still not a foul. With Jota, the angle.
Jota puts his leg out in an angle into the goalkeeper, so he can get the contact. I mean,
it was a mistake, Rob, and everybody's human. I get that. It's frustrating for everybody, and the Crystal Palace fans might feel that two goals shouldn't have been awarded, but that, I just think, come on, we're better than that. And I know our officials aren't the best around, and but that is a pretty rudimentary, basic, good to go ref. Nothing to see here. Carry on. Shocker.
Yeah, absolute shocker. And just changed the way the game was going and where the Palace could come back in, a little bit more of a test.
As Vieira said, the worst thing is, well, at this point, we've ruined our opportunity to come back into the game.
Coming something back, and that's such a shame. But I have to say, Rob, a little bit of credit to Liverpool. They found a way, close the gap. No Mane, no Salah. They both probably are back after the international break. So all that talk about those guys being away hasn't been as difficult as it could have been for Liverpool. And they find themselves in reasonably decent shape as they come back from the international break. Looking forward to closing the gap. Looking forward to a League Cup final against Chelsea.
I just think, I watched the game midweek, Arsenal League Cup.
Yeah.
Fired up. Mm. Different players coming in, determined to do well. This manager is special at a lot of things, Rob, but I just think that continued focus and drive is what's pushing them through right now. The best players are going to... Well, best players. Their important players are going to come back into the team. And, so far, good to go. Like, two Premier League games, two wins.
Yeah, two wins.
You know, we'll see how far they get in the competition. There might be another midweek, Rob. I think they might miss one more. I haven't got the fixture in front of me, but Liverpool might miss... Those players might miss the next
Premier League
February.
Fixture.
Yeah, before the Super Bowl weekend, I think. But don't hold me to that. But they're doing a great job at that point. And Liverpool are going to be fighting. This manager will demand it. And different players can come in and do the job as well. So well done, Liverpool. Two games, two victories. Oxlade-Chamberlain, Rob, well done to him as well, because I haven't always been his biggest fan at Liverpool, playing in a wide position, but he took his goal really well, finished it off nicely. And Jota, Firmino, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain have been the front three and done pretty well.
They've done all right, haven't they? Yeah. Just to clear that up, the final is on February the 6th, the League Cup final, and they play Leicester on the 10th. So I think they would hope that these players will be back. From the AFCON there. Get to the final. But let's move to Manchester United, my friend, because as ever, plenty of eyes on Ralph Rangnick and his team. Who plays, who starts, who's on the bench, who's happy, who's not. I know you've got cause to feel that Ralph Rangnick should be reasonably happy stroke, content with what he's seen and how his team are doing right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but happy and content. It's probably a bit of a stretch, Rob, but there's got to be a little bit of satisfaction that he's making an impact. He's had a couple of steps forward, two or three steps back. He's had to do something different. He's had a few issues. He's starting to get a little bit of criticism. But I agree with what he said afterwards. They can still be better on the ball in terms of some of their build-up play and attacking play. Agree with that. Yeah. I would say that they need a little bit more quality to be good at that in the middle of the park and at fullback position. The fullbacks in modern day football have so much possession with time.
Yeah.
They can really be important in terms of that build up play. And the midfield players, I think McTominay's doing a great job actually. And there's a little bit of a different setup for them, and he's shuffling through the systems, Rangnick. 4-3-3. Bruno is a number 8. Fred is a number 8. McTominay holding. Greenwood to the right. Alanga to the left hand side. And at least I'm seeing a team that's got some shape. It's got some structure. It looks like it's a team. It's not letting its wide players run wild that Greenwood did and Rashford did and Bruno did sometimes under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, where go and do stuff. And they did some good stuff. But of course, there's no defensive protection from those guys. They are defending as a team more now. Greenwood had one play, Rob, on Jared Bowen where he ran all the way back, and took the ball off of him. And attacking-wise, it's not brilliant, but at least, again, they're doing it as a team. So he was happy with the way that they're winning the ball back, or due to everybody being involved in that process. I'm a fan of that, mate. And I'm a fan of a coach trying to make the team stronger by what he's doing on the training ground and not trusting the pace and stuff of different players do things in those moments that we've talked about. And again, long, long way to go. They got good players coming off the bench. The subs coming off the bench, Rob, made a massive impact.
Yeah, I was going to talk about the subs making that such a big difference.
Yeah, and Rashford and Martial, to be fair, as well. So good subs at the right time.
Yeah.
Really good for Marcus Rashford. You know, he's gone through a lot. And
it was nice to see him knee slide, smile, have the teammates around him, the place jumping, because he has had a lot. He's had a lot of criticism, Rob, and one or two people pointing fingers and wondering, you know, have we seen the best of Marcus Rashford? Is he one of those child stars who's going to do great but not continue? So, yeah, a really important moment for him. I was really pleased for him.
Yeah, and Mason Greenwood as well, like learning the work ethic. I want to see Mason Greenwood, Rob, play and look knackered. Yeah. I want to see him like run up and down, get involved in doing his bits, but feel part of everything that they do. And I know he's only young, but that's what being a top player in a top team, you have to do that. There isn't many teams in English football, mate, that do well with one or two kind of lazy performers. So I just thought it was better. I thought there was more energy about it. There was more tempo about it, Rob. Mm. It moved the ball quicker. I thought there was a good vibe in the stadium, great atmosphere in this game with West Ham fans added to that.
Yeah, it was an important game, wasn't it, for both of these teams. And
Ralf
Rangnick had his criticisms, Rob. Certainly, you know, observers looking in and not seeing any improvement and not seeing this, not seeing that. The Martial subject that came out last week and whether he said he didn't want to play and the manager saying that he said he would never refuse to play. But whatever happened, he was back in the squad. He had a hand in the goal. There was a big hug for Martial after the game. Is that Rangnick playing the game a bit? Or is that Rangnick going, keeping the door open and managing the situation well?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Yeah, yeah.
Why not do that? Why not? I mean, Martial might be like, get off me. You know, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Who knows? But, you know, why not? Why not? And I felt good for the manager because he's been a little bit pilloried a little bit, like, you know, what are you doing, mate? Are you going to get the respect to the dressing room? You could be gone in a few months' time. Yeah. You know, do they want to play for him? But he's trying to improve them as a team. Mm-hmm. And that's the job of the coach, Rob, not to pander to the star players that want to stay on the pitch or they want to stay high up the field and not come back. He's trying to persuade them to be a team. And that's what, you know, whether people agree with me or not, I am seeing that as a different look to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Now, the quality might stop them doing what the fans want most weeks, but at least, you know, I felt it was better. Again, next game might be jump back a few steps.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just felt, I don't know, Old Trafford's gone through a lot of tough times recently and the Fergie time goal and the knee slide and Rashford smiling, which hardly ever happens, was a good moment for him, good moment for the manager. West Ham would be frustrated, Rob. And Devin Moyes was frustrated. Where did the time come from?
Yeah.
Frustrated. It was kind of a counter-attacky goal they scored in the last few minutes there. Suchet was back in midfield at Declan Rice. And again, you can criticise the way that West Ham played, Rob, but again, United made it hard for them to play.
Yeah.
Because they worked pretty hard without the ball, and that was part of the performance. So
I just thought as well, and this is going to be one of the challenges of all those teams looking for fourth, and I think why we both felt Manchester United might get there is the quality, just the depth on the bench, Rob, that Cavani, Rashford, Martial, Van der Beek,
Lingard,
Matic. I look at West Ham, Yarmolenko, Kroll, Noble, Vlasic, Johnson, Masuaku, Diop. Just a different level of what you can bring off, and I think that's the thing that might hold Manchester United in good stead. Is that depth that they're able to go to and they can get the Rashfords and the Van der Beeks, let's say, and Cavani and Martial playing at a level where these 16 first-team players there, then that starts to look a lot more appealing for them for that fourth spot.
Just got to keep it going. We've got to keep it going, Rob. Magnus got to get this momentum. I know there's a break now, but it's a shame in some ways, but keep it.
Champions League kicks in as well. Got Atletico, Atletico Madrid coming up, so that's never an easy one. So, difficult sort of few months coming up, but signs of improvement and signs, I think, Manchester United grabbing that fourth spot now will want to stay there. Let's move on to Arsenal. They were at home to one of the teams struggling for any kind of results of season, Burnley, ended up 0-0, Rob, and didn't see all this game, but saw enough highlights that showed plenty of Arsenal good chances, plenty of Nick Pope's decent saves, plenty of Burnley defending, as we'd expect Burnley to defend, maybe not scoring goals, having lost Chris Wood and got money to spend, but at the moment I haven't been able to bring anybody in. But we have to go down as a disappointing performance and week for Arteta. Knocked out of the League Cup, 2-0 at home to Liverpool, and then a 0-0 draw with Burnley. They've got games in hand, Rob, but they need to, you know, be getting the results if they are going to be serious contenders for that full spot.
Yeah, I mean, no question, it's a little disappointing for the Arsenal fans. Mm. You know, we know that the progression the team has made, Rob. It was funny because it you know, you looked at the lineups here. I think it must be the one of the youngest teams ever from Arsenal. Yeah. Against one of the oldest teams the Premier League's ever seen. And it kind of reminded me of the olds versus the youngs, you know, in small side of games in training on a Friday. You have a game at the training ground, and you're like, well, shall we split it up? You know, North East, and let's have olds v. the youngs.
Under-25s versus over
25. Yeah, whatever it is, they split up the squad by, you know, olds v. youngs. And the olds often won those games just by know-how and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I just felt that Burnley, had they did what they normally do, 4-4-2, very narrow team. And I think that works perfectly against an Arsenal side. You know what? Let them go wide. There's a ton of space out there for the fullbacks.
Yeah.
Okay, you do that, because then what you're going to do? They're going to cross the ball.
They made
31 crosses. I think Burnley headed nearly all of them away with Ben Mee and Tarkowski, Rob.
Mm.
It's a simple, easy-to-execute game plan. And the two big chances, the highlights that we go through, of course, in the studio,
You
know, it was noticeable. They came from combining inside, going right through the heart of the team. I think it was Lacazette had one shot. But that was it, really. Otherwise, they were just, oh, here's a space. Oh, there you go, then. There you go, then. Crosses. So, well played, Burnley. Nothing different. They had a few injury issues, COVID issues. Well done for them. Typical Burnley grinder. But, I don't know, just needed a little bit more cuteness from the team. I don't know whether he could have tweaked the system a little bit. Arteta, he played kind of three in midfield with the 2-8s and a holding player. He could have gone to two holders and one as a number 10 just to try
and
be an option, Rob, to play through the middle of the team, you know, and force that and keep trying to do that instead of wide, crosses, head out.
Not
quite at it, Arsenal, that they have been. But well done, Burnley. 3 weeks since the last Premier League game. And they're grinding. They're trying to fight for everything they can get. No goals from them again, but a couple of looks going forward. Arsenal now sixth place in the table. Probably, is that probably about right for them?
Where they should be. Probably.
Fifth.
You look at Lacazette, Rob, as well. Was this kind of evidence on the days when a more clinical striker wins you the game? It's a 0-0, it's against a Burnley, it's tough, it's not going great, and you win it 1-0 because Mo Salah gets you a bit of magic, doesn't he, and wins you the game.
You know what I'm going to say next, Rob? I mean, it's water under the bridge, mate, but that's why the whole of Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang thing.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like bridges have been burnt, but would it have... we don't need to go there again, but could it have been handled differently
where Aubameyang situation
becomes, come back in again. Let's try and get you going as a striker. You know, I know they're looking at Dusan Vlahovic from Fiorentina.
It
looks like Robbie's going to have some bigger options.
Can't see that happening at the moment.
I think he's going to have a pick of a lot of the big teams in European football. But the Aubameyang's kind of done. It looks like there's no future for him at Arsenal Football Club. It's just when they don't score and Lacazette has a couple of opportunities he doesn't take. I always think, because I'm a big fan of his football, Aubameyang.
Yeah, you know, his numbers are good, Rob, aren't they? His conversion rate's good.
But that looks like that option's gone now. So, they'll come back again, Arsenal. They'll take a little break now. But it was a bit of a disappointing day for the Gunners,
Let's move it on to West London. Brentford versus Wolves. We had it all going on here. We had drones holding up the games. We had another Wolves win. Sneaky Wolves, I think we've called them in the past. And they're sneakily again picking up results. A little bit disappointing for Thomas Frank and his team. This Bruno Lage fella, mate, he's not maybe the personality and the media attraction of a Thomas Frank, who looks well, speaks well, has got, you know, good words and a nice turn of phrase. But this Bruno Lage didn't have to go about his business in a good way, mate.
I think the longer it goes on, the more we should be talking about Bruno Lage. To be fair, Rob, on this podcast, we've given a lot of praise to the way he plays. Yeah. And we know through his interviews that he works, I think he said once, 80% of their training is about attacking play and attacking themes and how they can create and score, which as a player, I love to hear that, you know, as a pundit now, I'd love to hear managers and coaches talking about how they attack and how they can improve. They're doing this when the front players haven't been as brilliant as maybe they have been in the past. Well, Jimenez is getting some goals, etc. now, but hasn't been at his best. Pedro Neto is a brilliant player that he's been injured for a long, long time. So they're finding ways to win without utilizing or relying on some of their star players like Raul Jimenez. So, so that's impressive, Rob. And, you know, I'm sure it's way too early for us or anybody to talk about Bruno Lage in a different job and maybe climbing the ladder in that regard. But you've got to be impressed the way that he talks, his philosophy of the game, and, of course, most importantly, how the team are playing and the results that they're getting. Entertaining football, winning football, you know, defensively strong football, just 16 goals against, which I believe is the second best defensive record in the Premier League, 2 goals behind Man City. So,
Only 19 scored, mate, which is bizarre, isn't it, as well? You know, less than Newcastle, less than Watford. And again, you just, because as I was watching this, saw this game play out, and made me think about, and again, listen, Thomas Frank's just come into the league. We've seen some good things. His team have disappointed a little bit of late. Maybe the quality of the league, the sort of relentless kind of intensity. But just in terms of two managers, I get the sense let me chuck out, I don't know, let's say Everton were looking for a manager. I'm not saying either of them get the job, but on the basis that Thomas Frank or Bruno Lage were in the running, I get the sense that Thomas Frank would get the job more, as much based on his persona and his personality than actually his nuts and bolts football. So Bruno Lage is always going to be one of those, I think, that will be slightly underappreciated.
Yeah.
And he might, you know, because of, he's not particularly media friendly, doesn't give you the line and the quip, he's not as kind of bubbly as some of the guys we see or talk with the phrases, which is a shame and which should not overlook. You know, listen, Wolves still have a chance of finishing in top four. I don't for any one moment think they will, but you know, after a difficult start to the season, they didn't start brilliantly. He's doing a fantastic job week in, week out, and obviously as a coach who does a lot of videotape, looks at the opposition, works strengths and weaknesses, his team are really well set up, understand what they're doing, which we see with and without the ball. It's just interesting, isn't it, how persona and public image has a part to play now in these big decisions.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the other one, Nuno got a job, didn't he? Nuno's a bit like that, a bit dour at times, and did get his slim opportunity at Spurs. It went away very quickly, but it's a good point. I think it's a good shout. And I thought Thomas Frank let himself down, Rob, at the end of this, where he's getting into the face of Jair Moutinho, who scored a brilliant goal. Moutinho, Ruben Neves scored as well, and those two players got into the face of Thomas Frank afterwards. He got a yellow card. He got a red card. Careful, Brentford. Be careful. You've got a really good first half of the season, but you're not out of trouble. You could easily sink down lower in this Premier League, and I think that's something that we've seen in the past. I've been in a team that's done that, and like, you have a great first half, you run out of steam. So Brentford have got to be a little bit careful. They need the manager to keep composure, keep his control, and make sure, you know, that he can bounce back from this. So, a bit of a blow for Brentford. Having a bit of a bad patch, mate. But no, Wolves are the story here, and well done. A great result for them.
Two teams always well coached. So we believe Brendan Rodgers at Leicester and Graham Potter at Brighton. Finished up 1-1 the KP Stadium. About right for you, Brighton's football deserved a point?
Yeah, it's one of them today, Rob, where we had three games going on at the same time.
Yeah.
So you're trying to kind of look. And when I looked at this game, I mean, Brighton were dominant.
yeah,
you know, the football they play. Again, I'll say it, they look like a top six team. They play lovely football. They got creative, skillful players. I saw Trossard doing some great stuff. You know, I looked at their bench, Rob. I commented today on the show on it. You know, we know the budget of Brighton isn't a huge budget, but yeah, they don't have to use their money well. They don't have to recruit well. This is the bench today. Tarek Lamptey came on, looked $1 million, by the way. Tarek Lamptey, yeah. Lewis Dunk, Adam Lallana, Danny Welbeck, Solly March, Moises Caicedo, which is this young kid that they've just brought back, I think, from loan somewhere, or a new signing. Yeah, yeah. Now, I know they're not amazing players, those guys, but they're good first-team squad players. They can rotate in this group. Pascal Gross sometimes sits it out. Yeah. You know, Neil Mopay sometimes sits out. Danny Welbeck comes into the game and scores a brilliant header. You know, from good play down the right-hand side for Brighton. So, forever, we'll continue to be impressed with Brighton. You know, Leicester have got problems with, you know, injuries and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But Brighton, for me, are the team that I want to watch. You know, one of the teams I want to watch in this Premier League with the way that he coaches, the football that they play, and just the individuals. You know, again, I when I looked over at the game today, again, there was times when they're trying to be a bit fussy around the box and they can shoot and they don't. But they were the team that looked to me, mate, in the last parts of this game, were going to look to try and win the match. So well done, Brighton. Continue to do well and rotate in their squad
that
doesn't seem to affect the way that they play. That's what I'm getting at. But, you know, not like City in that terms of quality, but they can change players and it doesn't really affect them. What a lovely position to be in. So you can keep people at a good level of fitness and get too tired because you've got others to come in and take their places. Pretty good.
Yeah. Puts a trust in his players, Graham Potter, and he's now got a group of, like, say, 16, 17 players who can rotate in and out, and the quality doesn't drop too much. Let's get to one of the dramatic games of the weekend, Everton, without Rafa, Duncan Ferguson in charge in an interim caretaker basis, facing Aston Villa team led by Steven Gerrard, so that adds a little bit of flavour to it. And it was Villa who got all 3 points against an Everton team. You've talked about maybe Brentford not being out of it, an Everton team that are going in the wrong direction pretty quickly. Give us your thoughts on this one, mate. Like, should we start with Everton? Is that the biggest story? Or should we start with Villa being the win?
Let's start with Villa. I mean, I got a lot of thoughts about... I have a lot of thoughts anyway, but this particular game as well. I mean, we all know what's happened at Aston Villa, Rob. But it wasn't long ago where they couldn't get into the Premier League.
Yeah.
Dean Smith comes and does a great job. They almost go down. They build. They're slowly building. They're slowly building again. They're bringing more players in this January. If you look through this team, Rob, and I'll quickly go through it, it's starting to look like a very good team. You know, on paper and in performances. In Matty Cash and Luka Dinya, I mean, two very, very good. Very good fullbacks.
Operators,
Tyrone Mings, Ezri Konsa. Yeah, there's sometimes
possible upgrade. Upgrade might be needed there.
Maybe
I think
in the future, but generally pretty good.
Yeah.
Emi Martinez just extended his contract to 2027.
Yeah.
Good goalkeeper. Yeah. Midfield three, Robbie Earl. Douglas Luiz, 23 years of age, player, central guy, Brazilian, got a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Good player. John McGinn is back in the side. Jacob Ramsey, great game against Man United. Young, local lad, through the academy. And a front three, or a two behind the one. We've got this Christmas tree formation going on with them. Philippe Coutinho, brilliant versus Man United. A little harder to have an impact on this one. Emi Buendia and Ollie Watkins. So when you think about the parts of a team, defensive midfield player, skillful midfield players, attacking ones, number 10s, Coutinho, Buendia, striker, pace, can run in behind, good attacking fullbacks. I'm liking the way this team's coming together. And on that, I think what we have seen so far as well, and I'm going to go to my underappreciated performer, it's an Aston Villa player. It's Emi Buendia.
Yeah.
$54 million from Norwich City. Struggled to, not fair on him really, but live up to that. Struggled to have an impact. Just 3 assists, which is improving. I think all of a sudden, continue at the club, he seems to have stepped up a level. And he has been underappreciated, and maybe rightly, because he's been disappointing since his move, Rob, when you expect more from this sort of footballer. But in this team, with Coutinho there as well, because I'm sure there's definitely a team or two that's got Coutinho in Buendia's spot with other players to come in as well. Danny Ings could come in, for example. You could play Watkins and Coutinho and not Buendia. He's got to step up. And I thought he was the best player for Villa in this game, Rob. They get the 1-0 win. He's the guy who scores the goal. I thought Emi Buendia deserves a little mention on this podcast, and Villa in general for a manager that's, I don't know, I'm almost waiting for Steven Gerrard to have a bad moment or two. I mean, he looks super confident. Yeah. Anytime the camera's on him, they've won, or I don't know, there's been an improvement, they've got a point or something. He talks great. And what, of course, I listen and watch all his press conferences. And, you know, I know they're going to, well, I know they're going to climb the league. They're not in a brilliant place right now, in 11th spot, but the way the team's coming together, the football that they play, I think Aston Villa, as we know, mate, are trying to go places. Yeah. I think they will go places, given even, I think there's other players mentioned, Rob, rumoured in this transfer. I know that
Lewis Suarez mentioned, they've got a goalkeeper on it. Then
bringing Luis Suarez. Can't think of who it is now. There's another top player that's been linked as well. But no, I really love Villa, Rob. I'll let you get in there because good victory. We'll get to Everton in a minute, but I just wanted to see what your thoughts are on Villa.
Yeah, absolutely, Buendia. Good shout. Just got into the picked in the Argentina squad as well for up-and-coming internationals with Emi Martinez. And you're right, and I actually, I'll tell you why I sort of smirked myself, because I remember Steven Gerrard's first game, and it was about 60 minutes on the clock, and he dragged Buendia off. And if you haven't remembered, things like still me, Buendia sat down and had a bit of a tantrum, more to himself than to anyone else. And as he was going, I was thinking, he's probably thinking, new manager, obviously Dean Smith bought him for big money, new manager, I've got to make the most of opportunities. I've just come off after 60 minutes and I thought, right, now you're going to have to prove to Steven Gerrard what your level is. And in a short space of time, I think he's gained the trust of the manager, starting to play much better, starting to express himself in a way. So good shout, Emi Buendia. The other mention I just want to give, and I think we've done it a couple of times, it was interesting, again, I was down in this Kansas City US convention, and a couple of people had talked to me about a guy called Michael Beale. You'll see him sitting next to Steven Gerrard in the dugout, the MB coach on his thing. Coach. Apparently, Rob, a lot of store goes into Michael Beale with the work that Steven Gerrard does. And Steven Gerrard's about a team. It was interesting that when Steven Gerrard left Rangers were prepared to keep Michael Beale and even possibly offer him the job. And one of the things that Gerrard, when it got held up a little bit, I don't know if you remember when he signed for Villa, that he wanted that backroom staff. We know Michael Beale's with him, and he's got Gary McAllister as his assistant. But Michael Beale has a big and will play a big role in things going forward. And it's so important, Rob, that these players like a Steven Gerrard, high profile, you know, can walk in the dressing room, has got all the presence, but you've got to have a good football brain behind you. Good person who knows the game, who can offer up things and systems and ways of playing. I often felt Frank's backroom staff lacked a little something, and that's no disrespect to Jody Moyes, who did a great job and won Lampard, youth things. Yeah. But I think Frank Lampard at Chelsea could have done with a Michael Bielas person next to him, who just challenged you in a different way. So I just want to mention that from Villa's point of view. Second point I just wanted to make, mate, was as you were just talking about Villa and look, it's a very different Villa from even Dean Smith's Villa, and it's a different feel about it. Villa are everything Everton want to be right now. Everything Everton want to be right now. Upwardly mobile, signing decent players, look like they've got a manager going places for the future. Young team that can be aggressive, that, okay, needs a bit of building. But for all that we're talking about at Aston Villa, that's who Everton want to be and are some distance away from it.
It's so funny you said that, Rob, because it was my thoughts going into this game as well. And it comes down to the leaders. It comes down to the chief executives and the directors of football. I mean, as I said at the start of this game, Rob, Villa were a championship team, struggling to find a way out. How impressive have they been as a club of recruiting? They spent money, but recruiting in... I mean, look at the difference of the teams, Rob, and where they're at. Villa to Everton. Everton has spent all the money and more that Aston Villa have, but look where they are. This is the key. And this is why there's a sit-in protest about the board at Everton, because it is possible. Aston Villa have shown that. They've not bought 20 players. They got promoted. They almost got relegated, but they've spent money in good areas, good recruitment, good decisions with managers, and they're in a blimmin' good situation now to go on and do really well. Where Everton have had the, you know, a similar group, because they were Premier League players, a Premier League team before Villa were, and they've had all that money to try and grow it like Aston Villa have. So it goes down to the most important thing we always say about recruitment, and that comes down to leadership. Director of football, CEOs, Perslow, whatever, Aston Villa, the other guy, the name that escapes me right now, but they've got good, experienced professionals in the higher-up areas with, of course, some money men, and Mashiri can be the money guy at Everton, but he's got to get a brains trust that can make good decisions, good investments, good signings to bring the club forward like Villa have. So I'm going with your point, and I'm rolling with it because it's a great point, and Villa, growth and where they stand right now is blimmin' impressive and frustrating for Everton because they could have been something like that. And they haven't been. And now they're in a situation, Rob, where just a quick word on them. And we all love Duncan Ferguson.
Yeah.
You know, but some of the names mentioned to the for them of Frank Lampard and Fabio Cannavaro, Wayne Rooney, Lampard. I don't trust them to make the right decision. But what I do know is it's not Duncan Ferguson. And we know for short-term boost, he's great. Yeah. But I'll throw it to you, Rob, in terms of style, right? We know what Ferguson was going to do.
Yeah.
And we saw it to a certain point. Is the old school 4-4-2, get it up there, win the second balls, get it wide, swing it into the box, sometimes like Burnley as well, is that style philosophy dated? And are we seeing, absolutely. I think we are, other teams, smaller teams, Rob, that are going away from that? Palace,
Brighton,
you know, Newcastle Brentford. Trying to be expansive, Brentford.
Yeah.
So
you've got to have more than that now, Rob, to win a Premier League game. The first thing I saw Duncan say, and he's right in, this should be given, but, you know, we'll work harder, they'll know what they want from me, but all that stuff is great. But at some point, you've got to have a bit of ability. You've got to change up. Defenders now, me and Tarkowski, if you keep crossing the ball in there, we'll keep putting their head on it. And they're not going to stop doing that. You've got to break them down with clever play, with more possession, with moving people around. And you've got to get a manager who has that philosophy and insight. You've got to get a good coaching staff who can work during the week to deliver it. And then you've got to get a group of players who can play to that level and believe in what you're doing. And at the moment, Everton have got none of those. They've got none of those. And the guy at the top who's helping mix this thing and pull it together, they've got none of those. They're starting from base. Now, in some respects, that might not be the worst thing in the world, because you know what? Let's build something. Let's go in for a team. And again, I talk about Brighton. You look at Stephen with Graham Potter. You talk about Stephen Gerrard at Villa. Ambitious young managers who I still think the Everton job, obviously Gerrard's out of, is a different situation now, but like a Graham Potter who not only can come and manage this club, can build a football club, can bring in the right people. Dan Ashworth is it, bring in the right people, put that structure in place, play the kind of football, buy the kind of players you want. You just talked about Brighton's squad, probably stronger than Everton's squad.
Yeah, totally.
That's what is an opportunity. That's what Everton can be selling, and that's why they still should be thinking about big names or important people who they probably, some people think, oh, they'll never take the Everton job. Well, they should be, and they should be given they should be selling that to get those people in.
Listen, Robert, let's move on quickly. Let's kind of wrap this up now.
We need to wrap this thing
up. It's tough to talk about all the games with great detail. Where are we next? The next one is
Leeds and Newcastle. Newcastle winning a game, first game away from home. Huge win for Eddie Howe and his team. Obviously, mid-January window. Still got, I'm sure, some business to do. Eddie Howe said they've been linked to every name in the sun out there in global football. But important to it that while this is going and before the window closes, they keep getting results, Rob. They keep getting the 3 points that were needed. And this was big against the Leeds team that looked like they'd hit a bit of form.
Yeah, I mean, I just quickly on it, it's massive for Newcastle, massive for them. They, you know, again, they're a bit of a team that it looks great. Excitement is built. They get a they get a decent result. Then they take a step backwards. This is a brilliant result. I mean, that's kind of it's kind of local up there, Leeds and Newcastle. It's a bit of a derby up there. Really good. I thought Chris Wood's looking bright for them. Didn't get his goal, but he's looking good. I think Leeds are going to continue to be good some weeks, bad the other weeks. It's the way that they do it. But Newcastle, that's such an important 3 points for them. They will try and improve even more. The team is better now. But that, for now, puts them in a spot, Rob, where they can really see an avenue out of the bottom three, my friend. And there's another, they've got another 17 games to go. Yes, I know that Burnley and Watford have got one game on, and Burnley got three games. I know there's a long way to go now, but in general, I just think Newcastle are going to find a way to get out of it. And this is a big step in the right direction.
Let's finish it off, mate, with a big game at the bottom of the table. It was Watford at home for taking on a Norwich team that, you know, this was the classic relegation six-pointer. It only, well, the 3 points or the 6 points, or however many points you want, only were going one way. Norwich won the game 3-0. The scenes I saw from Watford, mate, were, and there was this the delayed one with the floodlights? Was this, the 20-minute floodlights went out, didn't they? And all, you know, and this weekend, you say, strange weekends. My takeaway scenes of my thoughts of this was, your best striker loses control of himself, gets a red card. You lose 3-0 to the team that doesn't score goals, and Rafa Benitez got sacked because everybody should believe they should beat Norwich. Fans streaming out of the stadium at the end of the game, like voting with their feet, they're saying good enough. Dilly ding, dilly dong on the side of the pitch, sort of standing there. It's all going dilly wrong for him at the moment. It's like, can he hang on to this job? I think I said in jest on our podcast a week ago, I think we said, is this the end of Rafa? And I went, Rafa's got one more job, probably Watford before the end of the season. Yeah. Who knows? Who knows with this group? I mean, could this be him done, Rob?
Oh, yeah, I think it is. I think we reported a couple of early reports, Rob, that it's imminent. And that the club and the playing staff are getting used to the idea of somebody else. I think it's, I think he's done. I mean, you have that amount of games, you have that bad a record, you know, and you drop into the bottom three after getting beat at home by Norwich 3-0. I mean, that's, you know, you miss one thing, Rob, in that little description there. You miss the obligatory tight shot on Gino Pozzo, the owner of Watford. Afghanistan, you know, we know what he's thinking, and it's the way his philosophy is. His team is his team. He's already made three signings in January. He'll probably do more. He'll probably rotate some others from Udinese and Granada and bring him in to make Watford as strong as he can. And he'll look for another coach. We all have Ranieri. He's had no impact on this team. He's had no impact on them. They've got some good attacking players. Somebody else could organise defensively, and they might nick some. I tell you, it's the right time. The change right now. I disagree with other sackings at this club. Now is the right time. I was driving car home, Rob, the other day. I said it on the show today, and on the radio, talking about the possibility of Roy Hodgson to come back into football, out of retirement, organise them, let those front players run free when they can counter attack. But it is a big Sam, or it is that sort of feel because. They have got some decent players, you know, some of the other teams, West Brom and all that. It felt like it was never going to happen. So somebody else will be coming in. The next Premier League game they're going to play, they're going to have a different manager for sure.
I just wanted, before we wrap things up, my underappreciated player of the week, my friend, I wanted to give it to a US-born international, Josh Sargent, who got a couple of goals. He's not found it easy since his, I think, $11 million move from Werder Bremen to Norwich. Got himself a brace, a bit of a scorpion kick with it with his first one after Pukki does well to lay him up and gets his second goal. I believe he just had a daughter a week ago. I think it was 21 years of age. Just had a daughter January the 13th. So huge celebrations for him and getting his goals. It's not been the easiest time going into a Norwich team that struggled, but 21 years of age. And I just did a little rooting round, Robbie's got 2 goals in 19 in the Premier League, got 13 goals in 72 in the Bundesliga under Bremen, 5 goals in 19 USA international appearances. And he's one of those players, Rob, that's quite interesting because You were thinking USA international playing in the Premier League, who's gone for decent money and has played at Werder Bremen, would be a regular part of Baralta's team in the USA scene. And he's been a bit in and out. And, you know, since Jordi Altidore, there's no one. I mean, Pepe's come in and probably made the position his own. He's obviously moved now to Germany. But, you know, Sargent's been in and out of squads, which has been a little surprising. This can do him no harm. And certainly, those first goals, Rob, remember when I played in the Premier League or went to the old First Division, as it was at the time, and you get your first goal, it kind of just gives you belief that you can play and do things at this level. And it's one of those, I remember that, you know, Chelsea away, I remember at Stamford Bridge, scored late on my first goal. And I'm sure he's going to remember this goal in very much the same way.
Yeah, I remember this day for the rest of his life. He's only 21, Rob, you know, you forget, he's 21.
He's a kid, isn't he?
And about the two goals he scored, I mean, totally different. I mean, the first one, what a good finish, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's behind him.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of execute that. I mean, some might say it's lucky. I'm not having that. It's not lucky. Mm. It's like, well done. Like, he's done really well. And then the second goal with a towering header, attacks it really good at the back post, heads it into the ground, into the corner. I mean, he's a good size. He's got good energy. Played on the right side of midfield. He shows the determination to run up and down, which in modern-day football, I don't care where you are, you've got to work really hard for the team. Mm. He's prepared to do that. I think you make a good point about the confidence that he can gain from this. He's 21. There's upside. There's upside. He's in a Premier League side that's struggled, and it's, you know, it's not easy to shine in a struggling team. You know, without sort of getting crazy carried away, you know, that's a really encouraging performance from Josh Sargent.
Yeah.
His interview afterwards, you could see. In fact, he was kept smiling in the game. Every time he looked at the camera, he was smiling after what he'd done. So, well done. It's a great shout, underappreciated, because I think he has been. I mean, no goals and no assists, I think, coming into this game of 18.
Yeah.
And it was kind of out of nowhere. But what a performance. What a game. Yeah. What a win for Norwich.
Yeah, Dean jumps Smith, him out of the bottom three. Yeah.
Jumps him out. Can you believe it, Rob? I mean, the last few weeks are getting hammered, and we're like, well, the kind of table says they've still got a chance.
Yeah.
And they're crazy, showing it right now that they have. Last question for you, my friend. Any changes to what you think in terms of Norwich's ability to stay in the league? Or is this a little flutter, a little bit of hope that's gonna extinguish and go away over the next few weeks?
Dean Smith and Norwich fans, I'm sorry, but I just think they will eventually slide back into the bottom three, succumb to it. I just think the quality and the depth. But listen, I'm fingers crossed and I'm hoping for Josh Sargent, for Dean Smith, for Norwich Football Club. A great little club. They've yo-yoed up and down. They got rid of Daniel Farker early, made a big decision, went with Dean Smith. Let's see if Dean can prove a little bit of magic. But that was just the end, mate, of a very crazy, important and dramatic weekend in the Premier League. City finally dropped some points. It gives Liverpool hope. But we still have a title race at the bottom. Norwich jump out at the bottom three. Newcastle win away. And Everton couldn't get drawn into a relegation fight, could they? As with the Premier League, we're going to take a break from our podcast over the next week or two. We'll be back in early February when the league kicks back into action. But for now, I'm Earl. He's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe and stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's a good night from him. Good night.
Good night.